All right. Now it is time for the leader to qualify. Please stand so that we can hear and see you. We ask that you keep your focus on the recovery and the 12-step program. Overeater is anonymous. Qualify until 9:15. All right. Hi, I'm Tim, compulsive overeater. And just to qualify, I'm back from relapse, now coming up on 6 years, and I'm down 96 pounds. And the reason I like to just give a very clear answer, because I do not want to be... I like my disease likes vagueness, and once a month I get to sit down and weigh and see the results of my food program for the month, and I report that weight, and sometimes it's up, sometimes it's down. I've had to have conversations with my sponsor about my weight, and we've had to adjust my food, but that's all been worked out with him. So. Defining my abstinence, I eat 5 times a day, 3 meals and 2 snacks, and there's the list of foods that I don't eat has gotten larger since I came in, but I just want to be safe and sane around food, I don't have to eat like I did 5 years ago before I came, or 6 years ago before I came back. Okay, let me tell you my story. I grew up in the Midwest, and I grew up on a farm. It wasn't a working farm, but we always had animals and things, gardens, and we always had what I can remember was a lot of work to do. And and dinner time was, my mom was, she was a pretty good cook. I mean, not a great cook, but a good cook to where we all ate well. But I sat right next to my dad. I was the oldest boy, then my brother, and the girl sat on the other side of the table. And when my dad was done with his food, he would take from our plate. And that worked its way right down the line. I would take from my younger brother's plate, and then so on and so forth. And the only one that gave back was my mom. She would be like, the food went this way, the table coming from mom. And so the little kids did get something to eat. I had no problem taking somebody's food. I can remember when I was in relapse, we would buy something, an ice cream sandwiches or whatever it was, and my wife would go, well, can I just have one, maybe two of these? And I'd be like, sure. And, once I was into it, it didn't matter. I ate them all. And it never crossed my mind that was dishonest, that was, wrong, or anything. I just ate what I did what I wanted to do. And I was like that when I was growing up all throughout my life. I can remember Sundays after church, we'd go to church and we'd always stop at the malt shop or, afterwards. And I would run in there and I was the first one to get my malt. Because what I would do is I'd drink it as fast as I could, and then I would look at my younger brothers going, you're gonna share now. I'd be like, I had no problem bullying them. Like I said, we were big eaters, and it was encouraged to eat big because you were going to work very hard. And weight was not a problem for me because, again, we worked and we played sports. The only two things you had to do well in our growing up was school and work, and I hated both of them. I really did. I was not I was a good athlete. I was not a good student, and I did not like work. I can remember telling my father that he bought a company and we had to go to work for him on Saturdays at the age of I was 6 years old, and we had to clean his offices. We had to vacuum his offices. And I was like, I've just gone to school all week long, and now I've got to go and vacuum. This is not fair. And I remember this argument. And then during the summers, when we were 8, 9, and 10 years old, we had to go all during the summers. And so we basically had like 1 week off. We got a 1 week vacation during the summer. And I just felt this was absolutely unfair. And it was, and so. I would tell him, and he goes, you're right, this is unfair, but this is how you grow up, this is the life, I just was resentful of that. And we were, my dad and I, in particular, from very early, were just like on a continual fight. We just did an installment plans. It was like, and I was just, at every turn, I was defiant with him. It really didn't matter. Any way I could wreak havoc, I did. With the food, I would steal food. If something good came into the house and it was still available when I got to it, I would steal it and so I could have more of it. And again, never, you know, I got what I wanted, and that's all that mattered. In high school, the weight started to become a little bit of a problem. I can remember, I have a brother who's 13 months younger than me. And he was always a little bit thinner, and I always just had a little bit of a belly. But I played baseball and football and soccer, you know, so I could eat whatever I wanted to until about my junior year in high school. And that's when I found wrestling. And they starved themselves. That was like something I like to do. I mean, when I found out you could starve yourself and not eat all day long, and there was such a sense of accomplishment at the end of the day going, I didn't eat anything, and I'm not even hungry anymore. But that only lasted for a couple of years. Because then I got to binge Friday night after weigh-in or Saturday night after weigh-in, you got to binge. And, you know, you could put on 5 or 6 pounds in a matter of a couple hours. And the weight started coming on in college, the freshman, maybe 25, 30 pounds. But again, I would always find some kind of obsession, whether it was a girl, whether it was a job, whether it was school. School at one time, after my sophomore year, I got kicked out of school by my dad because I withdrew from all my classes and just took a spring break that kind of led into summer classes. And he's like, so I made enough money to get back into school, but so then it was all obsession about school. And the weight kind of went back down. I can remember that. After school, that's when the real yo-yo started for me. I was no longer playing any sports. And I didn't like running. I didn't like exercise of any kind. I thought it was pointless. You're going to run a circle, basically. You're always going to end up where you started. And so I just never saw the point in that. And I did like playing sports, but again, the level kind of passed me by. And the food was my buddy. And I did a lot of drinking and a lot of drugs, too. I can remember my two favorite still drugs are nicotine and laughing gas from the dentist's office. Those were the two early things which I totally disconnected with. It was like I knocked my teeth out when I was younger, so I'd have root canals done. And, man, when they gave me that gas, it was just like... And I had to do it several times because they capped it, and then they had to do the root canal and all that stuff. And, man, I was just like, I like the dentist. And I did. I really liked the dentist because it was just like, I remember telling him, this is the most comfortable chair I've ever been in. And I can remember him laughing, you know. And then in high school, I grew up in a very sheltered out on the farm and a very small grade school. And then I went to, like, Beverly Hillbillies. We moved to a very nice part of town, and I was way out of place. I mean, I remember going to school with manure in my shoes, you know, from going out taking care of the horses and cows and stuff like that. And you know, they were like, who's that guy that smells, you know? And I'd be like, oh, that's me. And, but nicotine, somebody gave me some chewing tobacco, and I never had it out where we live. And I was like, this is good, too. Well, my dad caught me. I had to eat the whole can. It didn't bother me, though. I was like, I'm not giving this up. This is a great feeling. The pressure's gone. I feel right with the world. And I found that in drugs. I found that in alcohol. I found that in food. I never made the connection with food until after... That's all right. Until after I gave up the drugs, or the obsession for drugs and alcohol lifted when I was about 29 years old, it just kind of ran its course. And that's why I don't drink anymore, but I don't qualify myself as an alcoholic because I never had to do any work to keep it. I mean, once I was done with it, I was done with it. It didn't. It was just like, all right. But right afterwards, the food really came in, and I had my first big weight gain of probably 60 to 70 pounds. And I remember I had just gotten into 12-step programs because I do have an alcohol in my family. My godfather, you know, was my Eskimo. He got me into Al-Anon, and I mean, he was an alcoholic, and I mean, the drinking was that I drank a lot, but you know. The being around people really bothered me that drank. And So I went to Al-Anon, and the weight was, I mean, I was like probably 260, and you know, I had just broken up with my most current alcoholic that I was dating, because I would try to keep up with him, and you know, I did really well, but I couldn't do it over the long term. I couldn't do it every night, and so I was working the 12 steps, and that's when I started to get into exercise, and I remember feeling so bad about myself. I'd start walking, and I was like, oh, I feel better at this. You know, the endorphins or whatever it was, I felt better. And then I would maybe do a little running, and I felt even better. And then I was off. I didn't run a 5K. My first thing I did was I just ran a marathon. I signed up for the Chicago Marathon, and I ran the Chicago Marathon. And then after the Chicago Marathon, I was like, well, what's next? I'm like, I can't do it. A marathon's boring. And so I signed up for the Ironman Triathlon. And so they don't let you do that. I didn't want to do the sprints or the half or anything. So I said, how can I do this? Well, they're like, well, there's this charity thing. I paid $1,000 to do the Ironman. And so I'd never ridden a bike, and I'd ridden bikes, but I never did it for distance. It's 112 miles. And so I went out and bought a bike. And I got a pool membership, and I started swimming. And, 8 months later, I did it. And I actually gained weight doing it. And they weigh you in the morning, and then they weigh you when you're done. And I gained a pound. And because there are a lot of snacks along the way. they do. They feed you well along the way. And so... you know, what was next? I mean, you know, I was working the 12 steps, and I'm like, you know, this is great. I love this, you know? And so what was next? I mean, I was really afraid, because I knew, you know, I was now down to, you know, 180 pounds or whatever it was, and I was feeling good, and I was looking good, and I'm like, I knew if I stopped moving, I was going to gain the weight back. And really, Everest, I was thinking, you know, Everest was very popular at the time. That into thin air was out, and I was like, oh, I'm going to do Everest. And I'm like, no, I'm not doing Everest. And so I moved out to Los Angeles, and you know, I always wanted to do something with the film business, so I came out here, and you know, I started working as a PA, and you know what? PA sometimes get to set up craft service, and you know, sometimes it didn't get set up because I would eat it, and you know, the weight started creeping back on. So what did I do? I signed up for another marathon, even though I didn't want to run the marathon. I signed up for one, and I remember White Flag Walter. He 12 stepped me from Al-Anon into OA, and he was like, "Man, it sounds like you eat like me." And he showed me a picture of him on his bike. And he was still bigger, much bigger than he was today, but he was, yeah, I was riding like 80 or 90 miles, mountain bike miles, which are a lot of, I mean, I do road bike miles. Mountain bike miles are a lot, you know, a lot more, harder, excuse me. And so, I'm like, really? And he was much thinner than he was. And he goes, yeah, I'm in OA. Because once I started eating these foods, I'm like, no, because I didn't want to, because people told me at the time, or what I remember hearing was that, you know, the Al-Anon is the graduate program of 12 steps. And to me, OA was like the grade school, kindergarten. And I did not want to go backwards. I was already in the grad school one. And so, you know, but sure enough, the night before I was running my last marathon, you know, instead of going down with the people and being part of, because it is a big, you know, community. There is that sense that we're all doing something special together. Instead of doing that, I went and ate a large pizza in my room. And, you know, it made complete sense to do that. Watch movies, relax, get ready for the race. And, you know, the next day was a disaster. And so I came back determined to lose the weight that I had gained training for the marathon. And, you know, the diet lasted till lunch. And I was like, you know what? I was kind of done. I hit my first little bottom. And I came in. I got the food. I got that I could not eat flour and sugar anymore once I started eating it, you know. And then I went and got really, I dropped down really low. Because, I was like, this is new. This is great. This is exciting. And, man, as soon as I got that, I was slowly easing my way back out, because I didn't enlarge upon a spiritual condition. This wasn't the most important thing that I was doing. I would leave meetings early so I could go to spin class over at the Hollywood Y and, you know, just exhaust myself. Because what that did, it did the same thing that food did for me. It would be it quieted the mind for me. you know, in 45 minutes I could exhaust myself. I could work as hard as I could and be drenched in sweat, but my mind would be quiet, at least for 5 or 10 minutes. And that's what exactly what food did for me. When I would eat that food, when I would shove that food down, you know, it would quiet my mind just for a short period of time. And so, but this was working for me. This really was working. A little bit of meetings, a little bit of exercise, but then all of a sudden I had to add, well, I had to make a living. And now I've got which turned into me be my wife, you know. And so all of a sudden, there's less and less time for meetings. There's less and less time for outreach calls. And I was out. Once I started easing, I was gone. And I gained like 120 pounds. And so very quickly, my wife and I got married. I kind of kept it under control before we got married. Then once I got her, you know, trapped, you know, it was off. You know, I mean, it really was. It was just like, and I remember sitting there looking at her, getting so upset. I had no idea how to compromise. I had no idea how to live with another person. You know, because at that point I was 35 years old and I did what I wanted. I went to meetings when I wanted to do. I did whatever I wanted to do when I wanted to do it. And now all of a sudden that was no longer a rule. And I can remember eating, going, look at what you're doing to me. You know, and that's what I would do to comfort myself. And, you know, 5 years in, you know, I was really done. You know, I was definitely a failure as a husband. I couldn't make a living anymore. I was just a break even, you know, barely squeaking by. I had just had my first daughter, and you know, I'd struck her. I'd swatted her on the butt because she, as a 6-month-old, kicked me. I'm like, you know, but that's where I was. And you know, on May the 5th of 2009, I eaten so much during the day, and I'm just such a volume eater that every time there was a little bit of room, I would just keep filling it. I would just keep filling it and filling it. That night, I threw up in my mouth. And you know, my wife, during that time, during that 4 or 5 years out, she was like, maybe you want to go back to OA. Maybe you want to go check this out. And you know, I told her, I was like, I'm just not ready. I was scared to death to look in and see what was inside. And I didn't want to do the work. I didn't want to make this the number one thing in my life. And it really is today. And that day I was ready. I came back in. I got a sponsor who hadn't experienced relapse, but had for, at the time, 10 or 11 years, had, you know, maintained 140 pound weight loss. And I was ready to do what he asked me to do. And he asked me, after 30 days of abstinence of no flour and sugar, he's like, he goes, now what have you put on your plate in the last 30 days that as soon as you put it on your plate, you were looking for seconds? You were watching the bowl being passed to make sure that there was going to be more when it came back around to you. And for me, I knew it was potatoes and it was rice. Because one portion, one serving of those two things is not, that's not on my register. I want more of those things. And he recommended, he said, listen, he goes, you know, you can play around with those things, but you're going to eventually lose. There's no sanity with those foods. And so, you know, I was ready. I said, I'm done with rice and sugar. And what he'd get, the foods that he had approved for me were big quantities of proteins and vegetables and fruits. And in those 30 days, I was never really hungry. You know, I mean, he goes, I eat 5 times a day. I thought you had to eat 3 meals and nothing in between. That's what I thought. And he's like, no, I eat 5 times a day. Because I never asked him. Even in the 30 days, I'd never asked him. He's like, oh yeah, I have, you know, 3 meals and 2 snacks. And I've been doing this, and it doesn't look like with that much food that you should be able to maintain that kind of weight loss. But it worked. But that's what worked for him. And it's worked for me. Some people look at my salads and, you know, for what I pack for lunch now, and they're like, You've lost weight with that? It's a big salad. And I have. And it doesn't make sense. But it just works. And so, you know, working the steps, you know, doing the 4-step inventory and finally getting all those things off the plate. Because I did one in Al-Anon, and that was a great experience. That truly was to me. It was the first time I'd actually looked at who I was that day. Up until that point, of the good and the bad, and just let somebody else know. But 90% of it. Then I took my steps with Walter when I first came in. And then this one was the most thorough I could be, and I'm sure there'll be more. And so, you know, that was another great gift, to get all the stuff that I didn't want to tell anybody. And I told it. And there was a freedom in that. And there wasn't that discomfort that I got, that unease that I had to get rid of. And I made my amends. It was an interesting story that I went through and made all the amends that were possible, the financial ones that I made, for stealing. I'm a big stealer. Still want to steal. I still want more. I don't do that with food, but I still crave more. I think I'm going to be safe. Something, if I have more of, I don't know. That's why I love going to Costco. You know, there's more. There's more toilet paper. There's more paper towels. There's more of this. And if, as long as I have it, I'm going to be okay. I don't know what that is, but I want to steal other people's stuff too. Because I think that's the baseline who I am. Doesn't matter what I look like now. That's who I'll always be. I'll always be a compulsive overeater, and that'll never change. Doesn't matter how far I get from that guy that was throwing up and eating so much food. I'm still crazy. I am still, and my wife will attest to it, I am still crazy. And I really have to check in on a daily basis on, this is what I'm thinking. This is what I want to do, you know. And most of the time they're like, you know what, maybe we want to think about that for another day. And maybe talk to some more people about that. But I had to make those financial amends, calling up those companies and saying, this is what I've stolen. This is the value that I put on it. If you have a difference, please let me know, you know. And how do you recommend that I... And most of it was like, here's the charities that we like. And I'm still, you know, paying those charities. And because my sponsor was like, this needs to hurt. You know, this doesn't need to be easy, and you forget about it. This needs to be painful. And not only did I bully my brothers and sisters, I also bullied a lot of kids in school. And so I made that list out of the kids. I haven't been able to get a hold of them all, but an interesting thing just came up 2 months ago. My mom, in fact, we're leaving to go down to see them. They come out west and spend time down south. And she mentioned this boy's name, or she mentioned his mom's name. And I'm like, oh, there's that name. And then I kept thinking about it. I'm like, this is the kid I owe an amends to, because I was, you know, I was tough with a lot of people. I was a bully to a lot. This kid I was in particular bullied to. And, you know, I stole his squirrel. They had a flying squirrel. They had a flying, you know, this squirrel got trapped in the chimney. They caught it. He brings it to show and tell, and I steal it. That's the kind of kid I am. I mean, this is in second or third grade. I put it in my backpack. I don't bring any books home, and I head out to the bus with a squirrel in my backpack. And but that's it. It never fazed me that's not, you know, that's what I did. And so, flash forward later, flying squirrels now running around in my mind. It's running around in my mind. I'm thinking, this kid, I owe this. I don't. And that, being the bully part, I had no problem. I really was like, you know, I was a bully. I had no problem. I really had a problem making the amends of, I stole your squirrel, you know. I mean, how do you suggest I make that better, you know? And you know, that was hard for me. And so, but that's the price. You know, if I want to be safe and sane and sober around food, I have to get rid of those things. And so I called my mom and I said, can you give me his mom's number? And I called his mom and I said, can you give me her number? And then I finally called him to make that amends. I'm like, so I was and I'm like, and I stole your flying squirrel, you know? And he's like, well, did it live? And I'm like, yeah. I mean, as soon as I took it out of the cage, I mean, I remember putting my dad's gloves, welding gloves on. I reach in the cage and I'm holding it. And I'm like, now what? You know, I mean, what do I do? What do I do now? And I'm like, you know, it scrambled away. And that was it. It got out and it was, hopefully it flew away, you know. And so, yeah. But those are the kind of things that, you know, I get to keep working those steps. I get to keep enlarging upon my spiritual condition. I don't get to go a lot of meetings, so I listen to a lot of podcasts. And so, you know, driving into work, instead of disconnecting and listening to the radio or listening to the news, I just listen to that. Because I can actually be of service now. And because now I still work in the entertainment business where they give you all sorts of, they'll give you all the free food you want. They'll just keep feeding you. Just as long as you keep working, we'll feed you. But I remember one time that I was afraid that they were not going to get my food. So I shared it in a meeting, just like this. I shared what was going on with me. And somebody came up to me afterwards and goes, why don't you bring your food? I'm like, that's simple. I can do that. You know, and so that day forward, and there was a little bit of resistance. You know, I hate spending money, excuse me, for food that should, it should be free. Okay, yeah, it should be free. But that's not, I'm not free. I'm at work going, I can't do my job. I'm like, what are they serving over there? You know, when's the next, are they going to have enough? You know, and that's a big one. Are they going to run out of food? And there's been situations where they have run out of food. And now I'm sure I would have been okay. But you know what? I don't have to deal with that today. I can actually be present and work and do my job and be of service at my job because I know my food's right in my backpack or in my cooler or in my refrigerator. And, you know, there is safety and peace in my life today through, you know, putting down the food and working the 12 steps and telling you guys what's going on a daily basis with me. That's all I do is just one day at a time, get it out. And that and the reasons that were once there, that were the huge, biggest reasons in the world to eat, they're no longer there. I don't need the dentist chair or the chewing tobacco or even I'm now on decaf coffee to disconnect from the world and what's going on right now. And that's something that you guys have given me. That's the gift of this program and what you give me every day. So thank you very much for hearing. This is the time for questions only. There is no sharing at this meeting. If you need to share, please do so with any one of us after the meeting. Also, please remember that the opinions of the leader are my own and are not those of Overeaters Anonymous as a whole. When asking questions, you do not need to identify yourself if being recorded. Please remember, if you ask a question, your voice may be audible on the OA podcast if being recorded. Okay. Are there any questions? Yes, the question is how my spirituality has grown and what my concept of a higher power has changed. That's a great question. Let's see. When I first came in back into OA, I can remember the clock was my higher power because I always knew it was moving forward. I knew that only in the movies does the hand of the clock move backwards and that my next meal or my next snack was coming sooner rather than later. And, you know, it was, you know, I didn't start praying until I got to the 10th step. You know, I started meditating the 11th step. And I started praying. I would pray at meetings, but not on my own. Because I tried meditation before, I've tried prayer. And you know what? As soon as I actually worked the thorough 9th and 10th step, or the 8th and 9th step, and started doing the 10th and the 11th step, it was very simple. Actually, I meditate every day. And I just go to YouTube and I type in guided meditation. And, you know, there are millions of guided meditations. And, you know, I pick one anywhere from, 5 minutes up to 20 minutes. And I do what's asked of me that day. And, you know, my spirituality, you know, my concept of a higher power, it was definitely, like I said, the clock and then the group. Like when I really had faith in the group for the longest time, because when I put that out that I was afraid that, you know, that I was going to go into this job, and it was out in Yosemite for 3 days. And when somebody said, well, why don't you just bring your own food? I'm like, that was great. That was a great suggestion. So, you know, I would turn a lot of my problems over to the group. I would be like, I would just, hey, this is what's going on with me and this is what I'm afraid of. And then people would come up with suggestions, and most of them worked. Or I'd talk to my sponsor. You know, I don't have a specific concept of a higher power, but like I said, I pray and meditate every day, and any of my good ideas, I check them out with other people. You know, there are a group of guys that I go and know that when I have a good idea about anything, that I need to start checking things out. Because, you know, I'm stealing flying squirrels if it's, you know, on my own. Thank you. It's going to be okay. You know, that's the thing that I never had that belief or that comfort. Today I do have that comfort. But I can't explain that. I just kind of know it's going to be all right. Most of the time I can remember that. And I'm going to be well taken care of today. You know, if I start thinking tomorrow and yesterday, but today. So.
Thanks, Tim. You ever consider eating that flying squirrel? That's not the question. The question is, how's your communication with your wife? How does program help you with that?
How does my program help me with my communication with my wife? You know, my sponsor, he's like, how long did you know her and you were in the food? I'm like, well, about 5 or 6 years. And he goes, well, you owe her time. Because your five or six years as an addict eating are like 20 years of a normal person, you know. And so he's like, all you have to do is just listen. Rarely does she ever ask me for any input. You know what I'm saying? She just asks me, she just throws it out there. And, you know, a lot of times, you know, I've worked all day long. And she's been with the kids. We've got two great kids. And she's been home with those kids, talking to kids all day long. And she just wants to tell somebody, an adult. And I just listen. I listen a lot. And one of the things that does come up for me is, you might be right. You might be right. It's just like, oh yeah, you might be right. What do I know? I mean, I used to think I knew so much. And now I really don't know. I want to raise my kids kind of the way I was raised. And it's like, what's that? You know? I mean, why? I mean, that's all I know. But that's my baseline. It's like, well, yeah, that's the way we're going to raise these kids, this way. And I mean, I was raised with physical abuse, verbal abuse, you know, I mean, this is the way, you know, yelling and name calling. And I'm like, why would I want that? But that to me is like, oh, if left to my own devices, that's the way I would go. And she was raised on the other opposite end of things, with very loving parents who maybe coddled her too much. My parents were like, if you want something, you go get it. You know, it didn't matter. If you want a flying squirrel, go get yourself one. That's not funny. but hers were like, we'll take care of you. And, you know, maybe there's something to be said about that. I don't know. It's not something that I go to, but it's just like, well, she might be right. She might be right. And these kids are different than me, and they're different from each other. It's like, I don't know what works for one might not work for the other. And I just, the more I think I'm right about something, the more I need to check it out. Because, you know, that's still disease thinking. It's still there. It's still right there on the surface. And, you know, my way's the right way. I want it. And it's just like, I might not know. Maybe, you know. And it's just for today. Just for today. I find myself a much easier, better companion when I'm dealing in today. If I start to jump to, well, if we do this, well, they'll end up being this, and they'll end up being this, and they'll be uncompetitive, they'll be, you know, and it's just like, it's all fear up there. Whereas just today, they're 6 and 4, we're going to deal with 6 and 4, instead of 18 and 24, whatever it is. So, then I don't have to worry, you know. Today we're well taken care of. So, thank you.
Thanks. Can you talk about, did you go make amends with your dad, and did you feel he owed you one, and how did you feel with that?
That's a very good question. Thank you. The question is, did I make amends with my father, and did I feel he owed me an amends? I made the amends with my dad. You know, I was a bad kid. I caused a lot of havoc with my father. It didn't matter. I would do anything to stir the pot, and I took my beatings. I took all that, but I did what I wanted to do. And, you know, do I think he owes me an amends? Yeah, I'm not really sure. You know, there's, and I'm not really worried about that anymore. Really, that's the great thing is I'm not worried about that. One of the things that came up in a meditation or whether it was a podcast or whatever it was, you know, I was a valuable member of a seven person team. And man, I was pulling my own way. You know, even though I didn't like the rules around that were around, I didn't like reality is what I didn't like. I did not like reality. I did not like having to work. I still can get upset when looking back when I had to work, I had to do this and that. And I can still get upset about that. But man, when I look back, I was like, there were seven members of that team. And there was Tim right in the middle, pulling his own way, beating up his younger brothers and sisters, you know, eating any kind of food. I mean, causing havoc right in the middle of that. And, you know, for that, I owed an amends. And, you know, I didn't feel that I was part of a team, but I was, whether I liked it or not. And so, you know, that's, you know, looking back, I'm like, wow, that's a different way to look at it. You know, that's a different way to look at how I was raised. My childhood has gotten better through working the steps. You know, my childhood has gotten better. And wow, I was part of a team. And you know what? I didn't like reality. I didn't like the way it was set up. It wasn't the team that I put together. It wasn't the rules that I would, because I would do nothing. I would still do nothing. If it left to my own advice, I would do nothing. You know, that's why I want money. That's why I want a lot of money, so I can do nothing. I can be lazy, you know. The amends with my father, I made it right away. That was one of the first ones. My mom, my brothers and sisters. Whether he owes one or not, that's up to him. And like I said, my childhood has gotten a lot better in the past 5 years. So thanks for asking.
Thank you so much.
So, if the question is there snacks being around children, and there's snacks being around, you know, and there's snacks at the workplace? How do if I feel hungry, what do I do? Is that thank goodness, as far as my alcoholic foods, you know, the foods that, you know, are bottom line that I don't touch, and there's a lot of them, I really have not been called to those. Like pizza, that has been something that my sponsor kind of guaranteed me. He said, listen, he goes, if you never pick this food up, you will never have a food problem again. If you don't pick these, and it really has. I have never had, I've been around pizza, I've been around, I've never had that problem. I've never wanted to pick those up. I've smelled them, and they smell good. But that's when, as far as my food program, my food dose every day, I eat enough food that I should never physically be hungry. Breakfast may be the first time I should be hungry in the morning. That's it. And so if I am hungry, that to me is like a 911 call. Because I'm not physically hungry, something else is going on. I don't know what it is. I still haven't experienced my feelings. I don't know why I'm upset or why I'm angry or why I'm anxious or why I'm hungry. But I know I have to do something about it. You know, so I pick up that phone. If I want to pick up something outside of my food, I pick up the phone. It's time to make a call because there's something going on. And I never figure it out. It just goes away. You know, I haven't seen Joe C. in a while. And, you know, I would text him and I'm like, it's 2 hours till my snack and I'm hungry. And he texted me a picture of a donut back, you know. I mean, you know, but this is exactly what would happen. I would see the picture and I would laugh. You know, and then it was gone. I wasn't alone anymore. It wasn't calling me. It was just like, oh, thanks, Joe. You know, but that was the thing. It was like, once I wasn't alone, because food will trap you alone. And once I wasn't alone with the food, it was gone. You know, and I make calls. I said, I'm just hungry. I'm tired. You know, I'm just, you know, a lot of, you know, I work a lot of hours, and I'm tired constantly. And you know, my program is gone a little bit forward, and now I can't take those feelings out on my kids and my wife because I'm tired. You know, that's not their responsibility. I can't be a childish and yell and tell them. I say to my daughter, Daddy's really tired. He can't handle this today. You know, I can tell them that. I can be honest about what's going on, but I'm not allowed to. You know. And as far as with kids, that was one thing I had to be really conscious of. I was very aware, because, you know, you wipe things up or you wipe it off, and then where does it go? It goes on my pants. It didn't go into my mouth. Never once. But I had to be really very consciously aware of that. That, you know, the extra stuff never went into my mouth. But I'd be like, oh, okay, that's right. This doesn't, you know, I never got caught with it, but it was one thing that was told about, you know, when I was having kids, and they were like, oh, might be something you want to be aware of, because you're constantly wiping stuff up. You're constantly picking up after them. Well, it's not my food. You know, my daughters are like, that. They tell their friends that daddy can't eat one piece of candy, because he'll eat yours too. He'll eat yours too. And I would. I'd have no problem. Are you done with that? Yeah. I can't. It's so funny. I watch them and they have a couple bites of something. Like they got this. I got them those little Häagen-Dazs, the one serving things, and they ate half of it and put it back away. I'm like, one of those? That's it? What are you talking about? So you know, it's great. So thank you.
Unless you're a sociopath, you're astoundingly sincere.
Uh-huh.
My question is, can you and did you, as you were first time and regaining your abstinence, could you sense sincerity coming back? Did it feel insincere when you were using anesthesia?
Oh, did I feel... I was... That's a good question. I never thought about that. The question is did I feel insincere when using anesthesia, or
you're so sincere now?
And when you, the anesthesia would be any kind of drugs or alcohol. You know,
food.
Okay. Did I feel insincere? I don't know. That is a really good question. I mean, this is the first time in my life that the foundation is the foundation is there. I was always in a rush to get the abstinence, to get the 1 year, the 5 year, whatever it was, to get there. And now today is enough. Right now is one day is enough. And that's a gift. That's not me. I always want more. I want, and you know, I've had to give up things. You know, I've had to put them aside because it's not compatible with my peace of mind. You know, I was aspiring. I don't know if I am or was, but I've had to put down writing, and that was hard for me. But I was working a lot of hours, and it was either give up prayer and meditation, give up my daily writing, give up that, and and I was like, you know what? I have to give that up. What time is that? Oh. Okay, so I've had to, that was hard. That was a hard decision for me to say, this is more important than all of that. It was very easy at the beginning. This is the most important thing that I do every day, without exception. And on anything that I do, work, family, anything. I just believe it for the first time. I could say it before, but now I believe it. So it's 9:35. Now it's time to stop for the secretary's announcement.